This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Bob Edwards. The U.S. Supreme Court today hears arguments in the first of three landmark national security cases. All involve the detention of so-called enemy combatants in the war on terror. The justices will focus today on the foreigners who have been detained for 2 years at the U.S. Naval Base at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. NPR Legal Affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg reports.
More than 600 prisoners from 44 countries live at Guantanamo in caged cells. They are permitted to see no one but their jailers and interrogators. Most were captured in the Afghan War, but others have been brought from as far away as Bosnia. The Bush administration has taken the position that they are not prisoners of war, but enemy combatants who may be held incommunicado indefinitely without charge, without access to any court proceeding, and without access to family or lawyers. The president has designated six of the detainees for trial by military commission on war crimes charges, but to date no military tribunal has taken place. In that setting, the families of two British prisoners, two Australians, and 12 Kuwaitis have challenged their imprisonment. All maintain they were innocent bystanders in Afghanistan, either visiting family there or doing charitable work. The Guantanamo prisoners have acquired a fascinating and unlikely array of allies who have filed friend-of-the-court briefs in the Supreme Court. Among them, the top officers of organizations representing former U.S. prisoners of war, the Japanese-American who unsuccessfully challenged the Japanese internment in World War II, the military's own defense lawyers who will be assigned to defend detainees charged with war crimes, and an array of high-ranking former military officers, including two former judge advocate generals. Rear Admiral John Hudson, now dean of Franklin Pierce Law School, sums up their argument, contending that the Geneva Convention requires a simple hearing to determine the status of a prisoner. That, he says, will separate the men from the boys, or as he puts it,
the goat herders from the real serious terrorists. You know, we did this in the Gulf War. We had about 1,200 hearings to determine the status of the prisoners, and two-thirds of them were released as being not combatants.
The Bush administration contends that under the laws of war, it may deal with the detainees as it wishes. White House counsel Alberto Gonzalez.
Nothing in the law of war has ever required a country to charge enemy combatants with crimes or provide them access to counsel or allow them to challenge their detention in court. Now, this detention is not an act of punishment, but one of security and military necessity, and it serves the important purpose of preventing enemy combatants from continuing their attacks.
Lawyers representing the detainees, however, argue that the administration has set up a straw man. The detainees, they contend, are not seeking the full panoply of rights due a person in a U.S. criminal trial. Northwestern University law professor Douglas Castle argues that in many cases, all that a prisoner would get would be a military hearing where the detainee himself would be the only witness.
It is at least a basic hearing where the prisoner, assisted by an attorney, has an opportunity to say, I was in Afghanistan visiting grandma. I can prove it to you, and here's how.
The Bush administration says it already has a screening process, that in Afghanistan it kept only a small fraction of the prisoners it captured. The lawyers for the Guantanamo detainees counter by noting that many detainees were captured in other countries, Gambia, Zambia, Pakistan, even Bosnia, and that in Afghanistan the U.S. paid bounty for each prisoner turned over by the Northern Alliance. But in appealing to the Supreme Court, the detainees are flying in the face of a World War II-era decision involving German soldiers tried and convicted for war crimes. In that case, the Supreme Court said that because the Germans were captured and held abroad, the U.S. courts had no jurisdiction. The lawyers for the Guantanamo detainees will argue that the naval base at Guantanamo is not foreign territory, that the U.S. holds the lease on the land in perpetuity, and that under the terms of the lease, the U.S. has exclusive jurisdiction. But the Bush administration will counter that because the land belongs technically to Cuba, it is foreign territory, and that regardless, under the World War II precedent, U.S. courts have no jurisdiction. Former Deputy White House Counsel Brad Berenson.
The federal courts have no business getting between our military and the nation's enemies. To allow them to do that would be extremely pernicious and would impair our ability to fight the war effectively in numerous ways.
Northwestern's Douglas Castle counters that this case is different because in the World War II case, the prisoners did get lawyers and trials.
At the end of a trial, albeit a military trial with shortcomings, they were determined to have been enemy combatants. Whereas in this case, all of them say that they were in Afghanistan for reasons other than combat or terrorism, and yet none of them have had a chance to demonstrate that before any sort of court, military or otherwise.
The Bush administration argues that it cannot countenance any interference from lawyers or courts because of the need for intelligence. Former administration lawyer Brad Berenson.
The minute you provide a lawyer to a detainee at Guantanamo, that detainee is going to stop talking to your interrogators. If, hypothetically, that person has information that could help us prevent the next 9/11, we won't get it.
But lawyers for the detainees say that while intelligence might be a justification at the outset of a detention, that justification rapidly diminishes after a period of months or, as here, years. And Professor Castle notes that American law gives citizens and non-citizens alike the right to challenge their imprisonment.
We're supposed to stand for the rule of law and not make people's liberty and rights dependent on the good faith of executive and military officials.
Castle notes that at a lower court argument in the Guantanamo case, the government maintained that no matter what it does with the prisoners, the courts have no power to intervene, even if the prisoners are tortured or executed. Former White House lawyer Berenson concedes the point, but notes that there have been no allegations of torture at Guantanamo and that the Red Cross regularly inspects the camp. Enemy detentions are not pretty, says Berenson, and they involve risks that innocents will be wrongly detained. But that is an inevitable part of war, he says, just as the decision to drop a bomb risks that innocents will be killed or injured.
When we are at war, there is nothing that requires us to be charitable to our enemies. On the contrary, the highest duties our elected leaders have is to be as ruthless as possible with our enemies when the survival of the nation is at stake and the safety and security of the American public is at stake.
Finally, there is the fact that the war on terror is unlike any other we've ever fought. Not only is it a war that does not involve nations, it is a war that is widely expected to last decades, even lifetimes. White House counsel Alberto Gonzalez concedes that we cannot know when the war on terror will be over, but he notes,
American soldiers were held in the war in Vietnam and during World War II and World War I and the Korean War for years and years. And so the fact that some folks have been held for a couple of years in Guantanamo is not unusual if you look back at what has happened in past wars.
The difference, say lawyers for the Guantanamo detainees, is that in those wars, there was no doubt that the prisoners were combatants. In this war, though, there are no uniforms. Many innocents may have been swept up, and the U.S. has held them for 2 years now without providing a hearing to determine whether they are, in fact, combatants. Retired Marine Corps General David Brahms, who was directly involved in negotiating the return of American POWs from Vietnam, worries that the precedent the U.S. sets today in Guantanamo will be used against U.S. soldiers who are captured tomorrow. Besides that, he says,
we live in a democracy, and there are rules, and those rules don't go away because there is a national or international crisis. That's the thing which makes us different.
Liberty versus security. Who decides where to draw the line? The president alone? Or do the courts have a role to play, too? That is the question the Supreme Court faces today. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.